welcome your ears to episode number 199 of the Triple Option with RBKD on the horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, streaming live all the time, when and wherever you may be, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. On today's show, Houston sports fans would love a DeLorean right about now. Sark wants all the smoke. And how well do you remember your passwords? Joined alongside by lifetime Longhorn and card-carrying member of DBU, he's a mercenary mouthpiece, pop culture critic, and the one they call Blackstradamus. He's also the inventor of the Corona kit. He is Rod Babers. Rod B, how are we doing today?
Doing great, brother. I appreciate the intro, as always. How you doing today?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Appreciate you appreciating the intro, as always. Also joined by a lifetime Longhorn and lifetime Austinite. He's so much of a man, they had to take one of his balls away to keep it fair for the rest of us. He knows where your IT guy's IT guy went to college. He is Kevin Dunn. Katie, what's going on?
Doing great, guys. Beautiful day outside and excited to be talking about Sark. Optimism there. Lots of things to look forward to. And kind of thought about that last night. Appreciate you guys letting me bail to go see Rogan and Chappelle, or Chappelle and Rogan.
Nice.
Let's put it the right way. Man, yeah, it was really good. All of them were funny. They kind of ripped on both teams, which you guys know I like that type of comedy.
Longhorns and the Aggies?
Yeah, Longhorns and the Sooners.
Nice.
They made fun of both. And there's plenty of material. So it was good stuff. I mean, and then there was obviously other stuff, which with this climate, some of it's just naturally going to be political. But I thought it was really funny, good. And props to Stubbs, because we had to get there early and get tested. It was incredibly organized. So that's the other thing, too, is that
nice.
I was at the vet this morning. So I don't know what they're doing in Copeland. Shout out to them.
Mm.
But that's the only place I've been since I found out that I'm negative again.
There you go. So you got tested at the door last night?
Yeah. No, we got tested at the door. They put you, like, there were all these groups, like, labeled 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you're in this pen, the group that you're going to be with sitting at the table.
Mm.
And they come up and they test you, and 10 minutes later they came back and said, hey, you guys are all good to go. Welcome to the show.
How about that?
Yeah.
Anyone get turned away?
We were laughing about that. And so as we're waiting, I thought, you know, there could be one of us that just has to say, have fun, guys. Have fun at the show. I'll be hanging out, you know, with BK on 6th Street.
Oh, man. No, not if you have COVID. I ain't hanging out with you
true.
Down there.
That's true. I'd lie about it. Nah, BK, I just didn't want to go. Moral reasons.
Yeah, sure. I'm glad you had a good time.
Yeah.
Glad you're back as well. I'll be here. I am BK, Brad Kellner. Together, we are the Triple Option with RBKD, rocking and rolling until 7 o'clock here on the Horn. We appreciate y'all spending some or all of your Wednesday afternoon with us. After we get off the air, 8 o'clock tonight, Texas will take on Texas Tech. Another top 15 matchup on deck for the Longhorns. Pregame will start at 7:30. Tip off for that game at 8 o'clock. So we'll have our full show, but pretty much right after we get off the air, we'll hand you over to Craig Way and Eddie O for some Longhorn basketball big game. We'll talk about that a little bit later. We'll talk about what's going on in Houston. My goodness, it must be fun to be a sports radio host down in H-Town these days with all of the drama going on. Maybe not as fun to be a sports fan down in Houston. And we'll obviously get our own H-Town guy, Rod Babers' thoughts on everything surrounding the Texans and, of course, the James Harden saga with the Rockets. But, KD, I want to give you the floor first, because Rod B and I had the opportunity to give our immediate thoughts after Steve Sarkisian's press conference yesterday. You dipped out a little bit early. So major takeaways for you from what you heard from the new Texas football coach.
It was everything you want to hear, and this should be like a honeymoon. If something goes wrong on this day, then there could be problems ahead. And nothing went wrong. And the things that stood out to me, one, he kept on emphasizing, and you guys did a great job. I listened to it, your reaction to it, and I agree with a lot of that. So get to hornfm.com if you want to hear that immediate reaction. But, you know, put the emphasis on work. And he said, look, we're going to have to put the work in. And I know, and I'm trying to stay away from being fanboy, because it's easy for anyone when it's your new coach to sell yourself and be like, yeah, we need to do that. And you look back 4 years later and you're thinking stuff the coach said, and it's like, well, that meant nothing. Those were just words. That never came true. But he kept on talking about work. I do think he's real, and some of the stuff he's been through, but probably who he has been his whole life. I mean, he kept on talking about that, and from people that I've talked to that work with him, they echo that, and that's one of the things they say. This guy is authentic, and I think that's going to play on the recruiting trail and play with the locker room, a locker room that I think Tom Herman lost, and I think he's aware of that. And he talked about the connectivity of this team. I hope he's right about that, and I'm sure there's some things that he saw. The other thing, too, when he said, I'm glad Craig talked about it because I wanted someone to ask this question, and Craig asked him, he said, you know, what have you seen from this team talent-wise? And he said, they look really talented. He said, I want to see these guys in person, though. So he wasn't too committal with that. I think he played the sides pretty well. He kept it open. And as he said, he's going to try and carry the momentum. And it was great advertising and marketing from that national championship and just try to carry that on to his first couple weeks as Texas head coach.
Yeah, you want to try to harness, and I agree with what you said. You want to harness as much of this momentum as you can. And he's already starting to get the, starting to get the attention of recruits. There's already a top recruit, a blue chip recruit receiver that's already decided he wants to jump on the bandwagon. There are whispers that there could be other big time recruits that decide they want to get on the Steve Sarkisian bandwagon, especially after watching the way Alabama dominated offensively, specifically in that national title game against Ohio State. So, you know, Mike Brown did it when he first came in 1998. With, first of all, getting Ricky to stay was big.
Yeah.
But then also using, you know, that momentum of Ricky winning the Heisman. And I said this yesterday, you know, KD, I think Texas is a similar position as they were in 98. You're more of a historian than me, but
you know, I think you're right. I heard that.
You're right. The people don't really think about it now, but Texas wasn't the it school back then. It wasn't a cool school to go to. I remember coming up as a 17, 18-year-old. I wasn't thinking it was cool. Florida State was cool to go to, and that's what Florida State was one of my schools that I was thinking about going to because it was kind of an it school. It was trendy at the time, and Mack Brown did a really good job of harnessing that momentum and making – with Ricky Williams, the rebel with a cause, making Texas the trendy it school again. Then you get the 99 class, number one recruiting class in the country, with Chris Sims and Corey Redding. That was big. I was a part of that class, but I'm not saying that I was as big as those guys. But, you know, I mean, it was the number one recruiting class. Then that momentum just continued, and ultimately you win the title in 2005. It takes a little longer. Sark's not going to be given that much time to do it. But in terms of making Texas cool again, making it trendy again to teenagers, to 17, 18-year-olds, that's what you got to do. And that's why I love that Sark talks about his offense being aesthetically pleasing. He talks about it being a fun offense to watch. He wants the fans to have fun watching the offense. He wants them to be excited about it. He wants the players to be excited about playing within that offense. He wants the coaches excited about coaching that offense. And more importantly, he wants the prospects, the 17, 18-year-olds, the teenagers that are watching, to be visualizing themselves playing within the Sark's vision. That's what he wants. And I'm glad that that's a priority for him. I think it's all interconnected, no question about it.
BK, and I'm not just saying this because Rod's not even in the room, so how about that?
Hmm.
No, but because we're all doing a show together and we like each other, but Rod and I like each other.
I agree with this. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
We all do like each other.
Yeah, Rod and I like each other. let's just keep it there. But seriously, I remember because I was following really Jerome Sapp early with Texas and Notre Dame. I was hoping he'd go to Texas. But then I started following Rod, and I was like, and Rod was having a monster year, and I was like, oh my God, Florida State. And it was trained in my brain at that age, because, you know, I was a little bit older than Rod, that Rod Babers wasn't going to come to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even in that class when he was coming here, it turned it. I don't think they even have to turn it as much right now.
Yeah, I don't think they do either, but this year's class, the class of 2021, that closes officially 3 weeks from now, Texas was only able to get one of the top 20 players in the state of Texas for this year's class. And you had Central Texans, too. I mean, it's one thing to be losing guys in Dallas and Houston. I mean, that sucks, too. But losing guys from your own backyard, right, from right here in Central Texas, that hurts even more. That's twisting the knife even more for this football team. And, yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel as cool to go to Texas as it did during the heyday of the Mack Brown era. And you understand why. I mean, Rod and I talked about this yesterday. Look, these kids were 7 years old
yeah.
when Colt McCoy was here.
Yeah.
And they were like
You're
three
right.
and 4 years old when Vince Young ran for the roses and Texas won its last national championship. So, look, obviously everybody remembers those moments, and that USC game was the best game in college football history, so people know about it. But how long can you ride the coattails of a game that happened 16 years ago?
Yeah. It's not science. It's actually math, BK. I was hoping you'd jump on that.
I don't believe in either. So.
I know. But no, but I mean, literally, you just do the math and you go, okay, yeah. Well, I don't blame these kids for not thinking Texas is cool.
Yeah. No, and even with Tom Herman's offense this year, which was a top 10 offense in the country, as we all recognize, there were times it stalled, the frustration of Bijan Robinson not playing enough, the most exciting, dynamic player you had, the regression of Sam Ellinger as, you know, going into that season, one of the best quarterbacks in the country, no question about it. Even, yeah, he's still one of the better quarterbacks in the country, but there was a regression that was more expected of Sam in his senior year, and I think everybody would agree with that. So there are things within that Tom Herman offense, although it ended up statistically still ranked high, that it was lacking. And Sark, I'm agreeing with you guys. I don't think there's far to go, even offensively with Texas in terms to bring it to its peak where it can compete with Oklahoma and be as creative and as innovative and as explosive as the Lincoln Riley offense, but also one that can compete nationally. And, you know, and I agree with Katie. It's the honeymoon phase, infatuation phase. Everybody loves Sark now. He did say all the right things, went to visit the Texas high school football coaches, gave them a shout out. That was necessary. Gave a shout out to the old letterman like myself, like wants them back into the program. I thought that was important. He seemed to hit all the necessary bullet points that you need to hit to knock it out of the park with, you know, was essentially, yeah, I mean, it's the honeymoon. It's the infatuation phase of any relationship. And that's when you're having a lot of sex and you're infatuated with each other, but you haven't met the parents yet. You haven't learned the idiosyncrasies that will bother you yet. You haven't really learned that person intimately enough to know anything to dislike about them. And that's, I think, where Longhorn fans are with Sark. Everything's on up, and it should. It should start out optimistic like that. That's what you needed. You needed new energy, new mojo, positive energy around the program. That had become stale and toxic and pessimistic with Tom Herman.
My favorite phase, BK.
Yeah, I haven't gotten past that phase.
Haven't met the parents. I bet you haven't. I
haven't gotten past that phase with good reason. You know, one of my favorite things that Sark said yesterday, and we've got plenty of audio we'll play over the course of today's show, I'm going to turn this into a Kevin Dunn top five list where I say one of my favorite things that Sark said, because there was a lot that really, really liked.
Do we have time?
Yeah, probably not. But he talked about making players the priority, right? And I think authenticity, it's so important. It's what I look for in human beings. But I think now more than ever, it's incredibly important to make players and relationships your primary focal point in the age of the transfer portal, where guys aren't just going to stay around if you don't have their best interests in mind, right? Guys are looking out for themselves, and rightfully so. I mean, it's their playing career. They're trying to find a way to play on Sundays and make money doing this. They are looking for themselves first. And if you don't have good, strong, healthy relationships with the guys in your locker room, then that's going to cause a lot of problems. It's also going to impact recruiting as well, because current players will talk to recruits time and time again. I just think in today's game, the importance of trust between players and coach have never been greater. And this was a recurring theme. I'll play this one clip, but you heard stuff like this from Sark all day long yesterday, just talking about relationships and making it about the players for this Texas football program.
You know, everything we're going to do in this program is going to be centered around what is best for our players. Our goal is to put our players in the best position to be successful, whether that's in life, whether that's on the football field, or in the classroom. They will be the priority of our program, and we will make sure we have everything in place surrounding them to put them in the best position to do that. And I think that starts with building authentic relationships with them. I think it's getting to know them, and that'll be one of the key components here as I'm getting now on campus here of getting to know our football team and getting to know our players individually, because I think it's critically important to have that relationship for them to be able to open up to me and for me to be able to open up to them.
Rod, it just felt authentic, and the entire tone from Steve Sarkisian all day long yesterday was genuine, and I think that resonates with players. I think that resonates with recruits. I think that resonates with high school football coaches as well. I just think that's incredibly important. And yeah, it's the first impression, right? I mean, the next time you can meet somebody, you could love them, and then the next 10 times you see them, they could be a jerk to you, and then you hate them, and you totally forget about that first impression. But Man, I think Sark pretty much knocked it out of the park, and I loved that, talking about the importance of genuine, authentic relationships, because with what we've heard about Tom Herman over the last couple of years, Rod B., I don't know if he had that. So if Sark's able to do that, I think he's already got a leg up.
Yeah, totally agree with you, and it seems like it's something that Sark has valued throughout his coaching tenure, that he's needed throughout his coaching tenure, is those authentic relationships. And that's why we assume the coaching staff will be a really good coaching staff, that he may be able to pull more Alabama assistants from Nick Saban than any other coach who's left Nick Saban, and that's been a lot of guys, if the plan materializes. So, yeah, I think that was really important, because Tom Herman, we know now in retrospect, I think Tom Herman really did intend to value authentic relationships. But as we know, in everyday life, think about how hard it is to follow up with the people that we care about.
Yep.
Right? It's tough,
yeah,
when you just live in your everyday life.
You can mean well and not do it.
Yeah, you can mean well. You can be like, man, I'm so sorry to not mean to go a years without talking to you. It's just that stuff happened or whatever, and you genuinely meant well. And I think Tom Herman meant well, but it's hard damn work to actually follow up with those authentic relationships. So you can say it, oh, I value the players, oh, I value the Texas high school football coaches. Mack Brown, I got to tell you, the handwritten letters, right? They are, right now, they're famous, right? The handwritten letters that Mack Brown would sit down and write a handwritten letter. No, I'm not going to send an email, not even to call him. I'm going to sit down, write a letter. I'm going to lick it, and write, I don't lick it anymore because it's the COVID, but you get my point. I'm going to lick the envelope and put it in the mail, all that kind of stuff. And he would go through with little things like that. He would follow through with them to emphasize that he truly did value authentic relationships. And that's what he's got to do. That's a lot of hard work, in addition to being the coach at Texas.
Were y'all lickers or were y'all folders when you sent snail mail?
Lickers.
Okay.
Well, pre-COVID.
That's actually a good question. You know, I mean, look, you know, as if the post office didn't need, you know, or needed one more thing to be piled up against them. It's already kind of, it was weird pre-COVID, where you've got this internet age and people are doing things differently. And BK, I mean, what does it cost now anyway?
For a stamp?
Yeah, people always forget that.
40-something cents.
They should just round that up. Yeah, it is. And that, yeah, so anyway, it's a good question. You bring that up, and I was a licker. I don't know if it'll be a licker post-COVID.
Yeah, I'm still a licker, man. I sent some snail mail last week, and I still licked it.
Good for you.
I wasn't sure if that was appropriate or not. And I feel like it takes snail mail so long to get to its destination that my COVID would have worn off by then if I had it.
Are liquors going to be like smokers now?
Ooh.
Where they're just shunned in public and you have to kind of, they herd you to this area and it's like, just go lick over there. All right, Brad?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know. I stopped licking, I think. I think now I just wet it, but I don't lick it.
How do you wet it? I
wet it with, like, I don't know, a damp cloth or, a worm finger or something.
You got your tongue.
This conversation, it sounds weird if you just jumped in on it.
That's what this show is. We go in and out of that, and then we're about to be talking about, like, double slant concepts in a minute.
Yeah, which is, I don't know, I guess BK still licks it before he sticks it.
That was always
the envelope.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. And then KD bringing up in and out, and this is just off the rails here. All right, one more thing, one more piece of audio for this segment.
Welcome to Austin, Sark.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Thank you, Sark. One more thing from Sark yesterday. This was a part of the one-on-one conversation that Steve Sarkisian had with our own Craig Way after the conclusion of his press conference. By the way, you can find all of that stuff on our website, hornfm.com. This kind of goes into the theme that I was talking about in terms of relationships, but this is more specific to recruiting. Look, Sark mentioned it yesterday. He's got two immediate jobs that he has to tackle here in Austin. Number one, he's got to fill out the rest of his coaching staff, and we'll talk about the updated rumors and some of the names we're hearing to potentially fill those vacancies there. But also, National Signing Day is 3 weeks from today. I know the majority of student-athletes signed their NLIs back in December, right, in the early signing period, and that was the case this year. But still some pretty big fish out there, guys that Texas has been linked to for a while, and Steve Sarkisian's going to see if he can close out strong on the class of 2021. We're all curious, you know, what kind of recruiter is Sark going to be here at Texas? Here's what he had to say yesterday.
Well, I think from a recruiting standpoint, you know, I love to recruit, first of all. I think that is something where I've made a little bit of a mark for myself in the profession. And I think that comes from being authentic. I think that comes from being real. I think that comes from developing real relationships with the, not only the players, but their families. And so, you know, we've generated the excitement. Now we got to develop the authenticity of this is who we are and this is what we're about. And whether it's via Zoom, whether it's via FaceTime, whether it's via phone call, once we can get them back on campus, now it's getting around our current players. So and current coaches. So all those things are going to play in place. But I think right now we've obviously got a lot of excitement and that we need to capitalize on.
And that's kind of what we started off with. And that's what I took out of this is that he understands that and he's going to try and just keep that train moving and try and really capitalize on what they are. But then, like you said, they're going to have to be authentic at some point. And clearly a lot of that's going to be about building the staff. Now, he did say he's not going to rush the staff just to build it for this, you know, one signing day. And I think that's smart. And I've seen coaches do that before. I was glad to hear that. And so I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of momentum, Rod, but he's not going to rush the staff. And obviously a lot of these kids are going to want a staff in place, right?
Yeah, some guys will be insistent upon that. I remember, I think it was Malik Jefferson, actually. Remember it came down to Texas and Texas A&M, and Texas yeah. A&M wouldn't tell Malik who the D.C. was going to be?
Right.
That was a big deal. I'm not imagining that. I do remember that being a headline. So some guys, it means a lot, too. And I think, KD, depending on, you know, that the status of that recruit, you may want to be a little bit more forthcoming
yeah.
than with others, all right? You know, if it's a big-time recruit, you may have to put your cards on the table. But I agree with you. Get the staff right. We've seen, you know, Charlie Strong and Tom Herman both make that same mistake with the initial staff and then have to overhaul the staff instead of tweaking it little by little like Mac Brown did. So get the staff right. Just tell the young man, no, we're going to get the staff right. We're Texas. We're going to get you the best damn coach in the country. I can promise you that. And hopefully he jumps on the bandwagon there. If
yeah.
not, then know, tell him what he needs to hear.
We all want to know.
Pull a CDC. Just tell him what he needs to
yep,
hear.
Yep, absolutely. we all want to know who the staff is going to be, but take your time to make sure you get the best staff possible. I agree with that 100%. So we'll play more audio from Steve Sarkisian's introductory press conference. Obviously, continue to give our thoughts throughout the course of today's show. When we come back, though, we've got some breaking Houston Rockets news. It's finally happened. I'll tell you what it is next.
Yeah, yeah. Yo, Black, it's time.
Word
is timing. It's time, man.
All right, begin.
Yeah. Straight out the
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. It is a way back rap Wednesday or an old school hip hop hump day, whichever way you want to call it. Playing some old school jams. You can always hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man BK, the real MVP of the show. He's at Brad Keltner in the Twitterverse. And KD is at Kevin Dunn 01. All right, before we talk, I guess we're just talking Houston sports in this segment here, period, because this breaking news that we got to get to is also Houston sports related. So let's hit it. All right, you want to hit this, BK, or should I? Do you have the news?
Yeah, I've got the news, and more news continues to unravel.
I know it keeps pouring out
right before our eyes. I mean, I am refreshing Twitter constantly to get all of the information for this. But we do know, according to multiple reports, that James Harden is no longer a Houston Rocket. He has reportedly been traded to the Brooklyn Nets. And it's actually going to be a four-team trade, at least as of now. It's a four-team trade involving Houston, Brooklyn, Indiana, and Cleveland. And as of now, the return for the Rockets appears to be Victor Oladipo, coming from Indiana, Dante Exum, Rodion Kurucs, three first-round picks from Brooklyn, one first-round pick from Milwaukee, and four first-round pick swaps with Brooklyn.
Wow.
So a lot coming back in terms of quantity for Houston. James Harden going to Brooklyn. By the way, lifetime Longhorn Jared Allen is involved in this trade. He is going from Brooklyn to Cleveland.
Oh.
So unfortunate for Jared Allen, who's coming into his own.
Yeah.
He's been a great player for the Nets the last couple of years, and he's been a force on defense, a great rebounder. His offensive game has developed a little bit. You felt like hey, he's got a chance to win a championship if he stays on Brooklyn, but apparently he is involved in this trade, and he is not going to Houston. He is going to Cleveland, one of the other teams involved in this deal, KD.
Whenever he was getting, I was watching him the other day, and when they get their pick and roll going, it was pretty fun, with Jared Allen, and I was hoping that I would love to see some pick and roll with my two Texas guys, but I'm thinking more about him just having to go live in Cleveland.
Mm. Yeah, that's not ideal either, unless LeBron's living in that town. I feel like
right. It's
not fun to live there. All right, Rod B., you are the resident Houstonian on this program. Look, the James Harden saga, and we'll play this audio here in a couple of minutes of what took place after their game against the Lakers last night. But Harden's been a distraction without question over the first couple of weeks of this season for Houston. He is now out of H-Town and headed to Brooklyn. Your thoughts, your initial thoughts on the trade?
Well, it had to happen. Initially, when he said he wanted out and demanded a trade, I said the Rockets better do this sooner rather than later before it becomes so toxic that it spreads throughout that locker room and starts to influence some of the younger guys, and also starts to influence really the relationships they have between the front office and the locker room. That's exactly what it did. I mean, that I love this stat that last night, not only did James Harden not score 20 points tonight, but they said no Rockets player scored 20 points. Houston snapped a streak of 161 games with a 20-point score, the longest active streak in the NBA and the longest overall since the Buffalo Braves in March of 1974 to 1976. So, like I said, it was spreading at that point, gentlemen. And there's no doubt about it that the Rockets, they intended to live uncomfortably, whatever they said. They're willing to be uncomfortable. That was way past uncomfortable. The analogy I always made, there are couples, some couples that they want to break up, they want to get divorced, they decide if they economically, financially, they can't really afford it, so they still have to live in the same house for a while until they get their finances in order so they can actually separate and go their separate ways, and they could spend a year, 2 years in that insufferable, toxic situation, depressed and sad, and it affects everybody around them, everybody in their social circles and their family circles, and that's what happened here. The Rockets and James Harden were basically a couple that knew they wanted to get divorced, they knew they wanted to get separated, but they really couldn't figure out how to make it work, trading him and getting the return on investment. This opportunity offered them the perfect situation, and I think they got a good return on getting rid of James Harden, and so at least they can try to start over somewhat and rebuild the franchise.
They got a lot of picks, and look, they had already announced today or had come out that he wasn't even going to be with the team. They were going to separate him from the team. So I like Rod's analogy, but this has gotten to the point where, you know what? We can't stay in the same place. And once you make that decision up, BK, the relationship's over with. And so at that point, it almost tells me they had this thing. They knew they were going to fire this thing.
Yeah. I mean, James Harden was done with the relationship months ago.
Yes.
Right? I mean, I don't think the Rockets wanted to be done with this. They were doing whatever they could to salvage this relationship and keep James Harden in Houston. But ultimately, it was determined, and rightfully so, that was not going to work. I mean, James Harden got off to a really good start for the first four or five games this season, but over the last five games, he's averaging 17 points per game, and he's not getting to the free throw line. Rod, you say that's his X-Man ability, is his ability to draw fouls, right? That's why people hate James Harden so much, because of the way he gets to the free throw line almost at will. Well, he's shooting five or fewer free throw attempts. He shot five or fewer free throw attempts in four of those last five games. He also scored 20 points or less in each of the previous four games, which is the first time James Harden has done that since he was coming off the bench in Oklahoma City back in 2011-2012. So he gave up. I mean, he wasn't trying. And I think his plan initially was, hey, I'm going to try. I'm going to keep competing, but I'll just complain about what's going on and they'll still trade me. And then he realized that probably wasn't going to work. And the process was going a little bit slow for him. So he basically took his foot off the gas and stopped trying. And how about this, guys?
His
body showed it too. Ooh.
Well, he's always had a bad dad bod, but yeah. it's now.
No, it's a badder dadder bod at this point.
You're right. It was always
a
dad bod, but as you know, with a dad bod, you can quickly get to fat.
Yeah, you know.
Just fat.
Before I play the post-game interview with James Harden that caused all sorts of controversy on social media last night, this is before the game. Rockets-Lakers was on NBA TV last night, and this is a national guy for NBA TV. They're showing James Harden during pregame warmups and listen to what he says.
I want to talk about some aesthetics. James Harden definitely had a pregame meal, averaging 17 points per game over the last four.
James Harden.
I read that today,
but I hearing it is brilliant.
Wow.
I'll play it one more time.
Yeah, hear it again.
I want to talk about some aesthetics. James Harden definitely had a pregame meal, averaging 17 points per game over the last four.
And they're showing him. They're showing him on the screen as they're saying this, and he looks fat as hell, dude.
Yeah,
because they're wearing the baby blue City Edition jerseys that they unveiled this year, and I guess baby blue shows your weight a little bit. And James Harden was looking about as thick as you could possibly look, and that was pretty hilarious. But
so he's got to get in shape when he gets to Brooklyn.
Oh, he will.
In all seriousness,
I mean, within within a week, he's going to be perfectly fine, and he's going to be putting up 30, 40 points per game like he did during his prime in Houston. I mean, I still think he's capable of being that player. I still think he's in the prime of his career. I just don't think he was trying over the last couple of weeks because he wanted to force his hand and force his way out of H-Town. But here's what happened last night, guys. The post-game interview, and, well, this is relatively fitting that this is the last interview James Harden ever gave as a Houston Rocket. The Rockets got blown out. You gave some of the stats, Rod B., but the Lakers came into H-Town and absolutely crushed Houston last night. And this was the entirety of James Harden's post-game interview last night.
James, are you surprised that y'all never made a run at all? In this one?
We're just not good enough. We don't obviously chemistry, talent-wise, just everything. And it was clear, like I said, these last few games. From the beginning of the game, they were just aggressive, veteran team, obviously, championship team, and, one of the best teams that we have in this league. I love this city. I literally have done everything that I can. This situation is crazy. You know, it's something that I don't think can be fixed. So, thanks.
Yeah. Thanks. And then James Harden up and left his press conference last night. Those were his final words as a Houston Rocket. Rod B., I mean, this felt like this was going to happen at some point, but then you had that press conference. You had the news from earlier today that said the Rockets are keeping James Harden away from the rest of the team. Boogie Cousins had his own press conference and was ripping on James Harden, basically saying it's unfair the way he's treating the rest of us. I mean, this thing pretty much had to happen, and sure enough, it did.
Yeah, they could no longer justify keeping him around. I don't know why they waited so long. I thought it had he tried to tell you in so many ways. There are oftentimes, and I'll say this with guys all the time, we're cowards when it comes to breaking up with women. Oftentimes a man will choose to sabotage a relationship, to treat a woman very unfairly and disrespectfully before and force her to have some type of self-respect or enough self-respect to break up with him rather than have the awkward conversation and break up with her. And, you know, I think that James Harden tried everything, right? He tried everything to sabotage the relationship. He broke COVID protocol and risked everybody's safety and health just because he was trying to get out of this relationship. Openly flaunted, did it with, you know, videos going viral of him hanging out in clubs and going to parties. He also said he wanted to be traded and then started specifying where he wanted to be traded at one point. And then now you have him on. I think he waited to the last possible second. I do think he had enough respect as a professional that he wanted to actually on the floor still be a better player. But you can tell now that he's totally given up on trying to stay in great shape and in the weight room and actually working on conditioning. He's totally given up on that, and now he's actually given up on trying to be an effective basketball player that's cultivating his craft. So you gotta let him go.
Yeah,
it's gotta happen.
And it coincides with New York talking about opening up restaurants again. Which, I mean, this actually could have been really good timing for someone looking to lose weight, you know. But I think that's gonna open up. And probably right after that, BK, strip clubs.
And the strip clubs.
Strip
clubs. Strip clubs in New York.
Come on.
Strip clubs in New York. Going to love this guy.
You know James Harden is already opening up Google Maps and taking a quick peek of where the closest strip clubs are to Barclays Center.
So any city I'm going to, you guys, this doesn't shock you. Like if I know I'm going someplace either for work or for fun, like the first thing I'm looking at is restaurants, right? Mm. And I'm thinking, okay, what restaurants am I going to go to? And let me plan all that out. I would guess the first thing he's looking at, like, online is strip clubs, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay.
And speaking of restaurants, how about this, guys? Apparently, James Harden has a restaurant opening up in Houston next week.
Oh.
Ooh.
Oh.
How do we think that's going to do?
That is the worst timing for, I think, an opening I've ever heard.
I mean, he should have waited a couple more weeks. I don't know. It's in the Midtown area. I just saw the headline. I didn't dive into it enough. But apparently, on January 22nd, so I guess a week and a half, 9 days from now, that this restaurant owned by James Harden is supposed to open in Houston.
Rod, let me pick your brain.
It better be real good.
Yeah, it better be real good.
If he picked the food, you know it's going to be good.
But also, like long term, I mean, you're a Rockets fan. You're a Houston guy. This guy did a lot for you. A lot for you. He's one of the best basketball players you guys have ever had. And you know, I Akeem would still be number one for me because he won two titles. But Harden is right up there, and you guys were so close to winning it. You're going to have some good memories, some bitter memories, but some good memories. Do you think long-term that he's going to be thought of like that as a Houston legend?
I do. To continue the kind of the relationship analogy, you know, I hope that once you become mature, you focus less on the bitter breakup of relationship, and you focus more on what you got a chance to learn from
right.
that person and how they helped you grow as a person.
Good times.
And I think, right, as you get older, I think now you're like, man, actually, I know the breakup was hell, but man, we had some good times. And actually, I learned how to be more organized when I was with her. She taught me, how to, to create my own app or whatever the hell it is. You know what I mean? Like, we learn these different things and skills from other people hanging out with them, and they help us grow. And I hope that's what they focus on later. But right now, I think it's still a little bitter.
I disagree. I don't think the Rockets fans are ever going to forgive James Harden
for
this.
So?
I mean, Kawhi actually won a championship for San Antonio. I know he was there for a shorter amount of time than James Harden was in Houston, but I mean, even Kawhi, with the way he forced himself out, he still gets booed, and Spurs fans still can't stand that dude. Maybe it's a different conversation if James Harden had won a ring. I think it's definitely a different conversation if James Harden had brought a title to H-Town, but because he didn't and the way he forced himself out like this, I don't think Rockets fans are ever going to forgive him. Rod, you think like real people because you're a real person, but sports fans aren't real people. They think differently. They don't have that class and elegance that they probably should have.
And I'm not talking about anytime soon. Like I said, that's, you're talking
down
about
the road.
An older man down the road. So, like I said, in the near future, there's no way. But I think in far off, when he goes into the Hall of Fame, Rockets fans are going to be like, he was one of us.
Yeah.
So, I think you'll get some claiming them way down the line. But you're right. For the most part, he'll be – not only this, guys. I mean, think about it. Now, the Brooklyn Nets become the NWO of the NBA. They are the most hated franchise now. You got Kyrie Irving, a flat earther who has – constantly whined about tons of things, and people dislike him for a variety of different reasons. You got Kevin Durant, the ultimate cupcake. People don't like Kevin Durant. He's actually the only superstar in NBA history to win a title and be less respected and more disliked after that. And I think now with James Harden, he was one of the most despicable NBA superstars because people didn't like his playing style, because he manipulated officiating as his superhero power or superpower. And now you got all three of those guys together, and they're also going to take the shortcut to try to win a title.
Yep.
Woo, it's great for the NBA. The NBA needs somebody else to hate right now, and hopefully you get LeBron James flipped as now, once again, the prince who was promised a savior to the NBA to tackle the evil empire of the Nets. It's a great storyline.
So there you go. James Harden traded to the Brooklyn Nets, a four-team deal. The Rockets getting a bunch of picks back, also a few players as well. The biggest name coming back to Houston is Victor Oladipo. But three first-round picks from the Nets, one from Milwaukee, and four first-round pick swaps with Brooklyn as well. So it's a hefty return for Houston. But James Harden no longer a Rocket. We'll take your thoughts. 337-3776 is the Specs text line if you want to chime in. We've got more Houston stuff to get to. We'll get back to the Longhorns at the top of the hour. We got to talk some Texans, though. There's only one Houston Texan in their Ring of Honor, and he was not happy yesterday. I'll tell you what he said and why it's a huge, huge problem for the Texans next.
Welcome back. Triple Option here. RBKD. It's Rod Babers. It's Brad Kellner. It's Kevin Dunn. All the way up until 7 o'clock. And as BK said, the Houston Sports Radio, AJ and those guys, they're probably having a ball. But We're having a ball, too, here because we got our Sark stuff. We've got a lot of stuff to hit. So there's a lot of different things. We got to stay in Houston, though, because this is good drama here. And it's obviously bad for the Rockets that it got so bad that you were forced to trade James Harden. But what the Texans are dealing with now, I mean, when I think of the Texans, I think of this guy, Andre Johnson. And so let's back it up a little bit. Deshaun Watson and Andre Johnson were supposed to be included in the Texans' process of hiring a new general manager and head coach. All right, so it's going to be Watson, Johnson, the Texans team president, and then Corn Ferry. And they were supposed to aid Kyle McNair, the owner, as he was going to, you know, fill those vacancies. Now, according to CBS Sports NFL insider Jason LaConfora, that all went sideways really quickly. McNair hired Nick Caserio, as we talked about, as a GM, as interviews were still being conducted. And, guys, that definitely pissed off the 7-time Pro Bowl receiver and the first player ever inducted into the Texans' Ring of Honor, Andre Johnson. He tweeted this, "If I'm Deshaun Watson," and he tagged him, "I will stand my ground. The Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers. Since Jack Easterby has walked into the building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization. And for some reason, someone can't seem to see what's going on. Pathetic." DeAndre Hopkins wrote this on Twitter: "When Dre speaks, listen." Rod, I'll start with you here. You're the Houston guy. No, this is not good, man. Is this going to turn into kind of what we just saw with Harden, where they're going to have to get rid of Watson at some point?
Man, it could get that bad. I can't believe we're
it's at not
this
there
point.
Yet. You know,
but Nick Caserio is the one that I can save the day here, and it's as simple as, you know, parting ways with Nick Easterby, as some people call him, Littlefinger, as I like to call him. But now the Bad Bunny is one of the names that's going out there about Jack Easterby. I'm sorry, that's a Freudian slip there. There's also a report, and man, I've seen it at Bro Bible. I've also seen it at Barstool Sports, that Jack Easterby may have been revealed to have a burner account, that he has been on Twitter stalking and advocating for the Texas regime. Yeah. Oh yeah, it's out there. I mean, I'll send you guys the story, but it's crazy. It's getting surreal with the Texans. The whole point is, I think you got to repair things with Deshaun Watson right now before it gets too late. There's no doubt the Texans, that Andre Johnson, who at one time was a special advisor to the head coach, and he quit that position, and people didn't really know why he quit that position. Cal McNair placed him on that committee, the made-up committee, where he basically he got advice on who they should hire for the GM job. So there's a lot of respect for Andre Johnson. You guys know that. He's a very meek, calm, humble person. He usually doesn't speak out about anything necessarily. The last tweet that he had that wasn't associated with Crown Royal, some type of endorsement for Crown Royal, was back in, you know, like 2019. So he doesn't even tweet a lot, and yet he felt passionately enough to have Deshaun Watson's back. I think Deshaun Watson is being told probably by more than one person, and Andre Johnson being that one, that person, that he should get the hell out of that organization before his career is wasted. And that could very well be true.
Is Easterby going Brian Colangelo, BK?
He's going Kevin Durant, man.
That's true.
No, he's an idiot.
This is so unbelievably embarrassing.
Here it is.
For Houston. I mean, Andre Johnson is the only player in their Ring of Honor, right? I mean, he is one of the most important figures in the history of that Houston Texans franchise. And the fact that he's coming out, and oh, by the way, it's not like he's got an outsider's perspective and he's sitting watching from his couch like a lot of other former players. This guy was in the building. He saw what was going on. He was supposedly a part of this search committee to bring in a new general manager. The fact that this guy takes to social media and publicly calls out Jack Easterby by name. And he didn't mention Cal McNair's name, but he's talking about Cal McNair when he says, "And for some reason, someone can't seem to see what's going on." That someone is clearly Cal McNair.
No,
so he's
doubt.
Calling out the owner. He's calling out Jack Easterby. This is as embarrassing as it gets for the Texans. The Browns are no longer the most embarrassing franchise in the NFL. Hell, the New York Jets might not even be the most embarrassing franchise in the league right now. With what's happened with Houston over the last couple of weeks, this is as bad as it gets, and they are backing themselves into a corner that I'm not sure they're going to be able to get out of. This is a huge, huge problem and an incredibly embarrassing look for that franchise.
That's why I didn't want to be hyperbolic with that, but these things, these fires get out of control quickly. And I know Harden had built up over time, but Rod, this stuff is probably built up over time. I mean, look, we have J.J. Watt mic'd up saying, "I'm sorry we wasted one of your years." You know, if there's anyone bigger than Andre Johnson, it's J.J. Watt. And you got these guys that are apologizing to Deshaun Watson. I wouldn't even blame him. This isn't like, hey, you got some bad family advice, you know, you got to stop listening to your dad or your mom or your best friend or whatever. And you're just kind of being a baby about it. I would understand if right now in his head, he's like, people I really respect have told me I got to get out of here.
Yeah, man, you just think about the things that have happened since the Bad Bunny, Littlefinger, Jack Easterby has come on the scene, fired your GM within 17 months. Everybody was like, that's weird, that's crazy. You got the tampering charges because you were going after Nick Caserio inappropriately. You ended up trading your best player, DeAndre Hopkins, and the report is because he had too many baby mamas, and that means he wasn't the right fit for your organization. J.J. Watt got into it with your head coach. That was the only reason that you finally figured we got to fire our head coach and GM. He's out of control. The power has gone to his head. And now you have Andre Johnson, the second most adored player in the history of the Texans organization, the only one in your ring of honor who is coming out publicly. And like BK said, he's calling out people by name. This is not, he's not being cryptic here. And he knows he's going to be shunned around that organization for a while, and he doesn't care. But for them not to be able to realize that the problem came when Jack Easterby walked into that building and you allowed him to be more than the character coach and gave him so much power. The same thing, by the way, you did with Bill O'Brien because you were too lazy to go out there and actually build a hierarchy that would actually lead you to a championship, and that goes to Cal McNair. It just shows me, guys, and I think this is true, you know, they believe because Jack Easterby is such a big influence on Cal McNair and Nick Caserio included too, they believe that they have to do this their way. I mean, getting guys who are the right fit culturally. That's why, to them, having David Johnson and Brandon Cooks is better than having DeAndre Hopkins, and having, you know, Whitney Merciless is better than having Jadeveon Clowney. They're turning a small pool of players into an even smaller pool of players because they have to be the right fit for them. They got to get a guy that's spiritually aligned with them. And it's an unholy trinity that's developing, and almost a theocracy where they believe they have a right, they're on the righteous cause, and this is a divine right, and it's strange. I'm not saying anything against religion. Trust me, I'm a man of God myself, but this is very strange, and I think this is why it's getting even more and more surreal. It's because they're committed to a cause that nobody else really can relate to, and they believe that it's a righteous one.
Yeah, and it may be, but in this industry, I don't think it equates to necessarily getting the best talent. I'm not going to go all Alan Pinkett here. Funny comment. You got to look that up. You guys remember that one? Whenever he was talking about Notre Dame, and he said, you know what? We probably need to get some kids with some misdemeanors on this team. And he was kind of kidding around. Of course, he had to come back and apologize for it.
It's a bad bit.
It's a bad bit. It's not a good bit, especially when you're doing color analysts for them, you know, for IMG. But I do think that if you're going to hold standards like that, like having a receiver or two, especially that position, and they've got a baby mama or two, like, you're going to hold the standard there. Good luck with that.
Yeah, I don't know any character coach that pisses off the three most important characters in a business and gets to keep his job.
Right.
And that's basically what's happening with Jack Easterby. I mean, they're siding with the team chaplain over the most important players in their franchise. It's baffling, and it's embarrassing. And we'll see what happens next. I don't think this story is done down in H-Town. I don't think we have any bad Astros news today, which is a good thing, I think, because the Rockets and Texans are crapping on themselves.
How quickly did the Astros turn into the good kid? The good kid in the family.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, he robbed a bank a year ago, but these two kids right now are having their own problems real time.
Yeah, it feels that way. All right, we'll take your thoughts, Houston fans, 337-3776, but let's get back to some Longhorn football. More thoughts and reaction to Steve Sarkisian's introductory press conference. It is Sark Week, after all, here in Austin. We'll give our thoughts on that. Plus, some updated coaching staff rumors. Could one guy be staying on staff next year? That's next.